Welcome to the Partner Marketing Podcast.
Hello, dear listeners. Very warm welcome to the Partner Marketing Podcast. My guest for today's episode is Marcel Chaudron. Marcel is an all-time partner marketing rockstar in the industry for over 20 years operating out of the Netherlands. He has worked on network side, at agencies, on client side, has set up his own business and works now as well as a consultant for partner marketing. He brings a wealth of experience and insights to our talk now. Hello, Marcel. It's great having you today in the Partner Marketing Podcast. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Mattia. So, I think it feels quite good, and welcome for thanks for having me on this exciting podcast.
Great having you. Long time no speak, so it's really, really good to have you here now. You are a affiliate marketing, partner marketing rock star. You are in the industry since 2002. We have actually worked together quite a bit. We know each other for 15 years, right? Maybe that's interesting for people to know as well. Now, you've been in the affiliate and partner marketing space for so long. What are the biggest changes you've seen over this time, you'd say?
Yeah, I think the biggest changes, you know, and as what you mentioned, I'm over, you know, I think starting back in 2002, right? The biggest changes, you know, from the beginning up to now, it's really the technology that we have been seeing. So when I actually started back in those days, 2003, actually, it's quite a funny story. It was actually before, or more or less the reason I joined Tradeover back in 2002, was that I was working for a small advertising agency and in the Netherlands. And we were setting up some kind of online marketing business. And we had a client, it was the Amsterdam University. And they wanted to have people signing up for their open days, right? So they want to have students, you know, signing up, and then they can send emails that, you know, there was an open day for the university. And then we did some old school media booking. So we did place banners on different websites. And then we realized, okay, now we need to track the activation that we did. So we really went old school, you know, because I set it up with one of my former colleagues, and both we worked at a web analytic company. So we thought, okay, we can use web analytics, but we also would like to get some more further insights. So what we actually did, and this is really old school, we had around 13 or 15 different websites we booked in exposure or bannering. And together with university, we set up 15 different landing pages. So every site that we booked exposure, we had a different landing page and a different URL. So if somebody signed up, right, they went to a different landing page. Hence, we could actually then see the results for each individual booking we did. And I think it was quite successful. You know, I think at that time, the client really liked the fact that we could see, okay, this was working, this wasn't working. So we actually got new budget for a new campaign. And then we thought, okay, well, we cannot, you know, have 25, 30 different landing pages moving forward. So then I actually start searching online. And then I came in contact with another former colleague of mine who was actually using Tradeover as a publisher. So he was a publisher, and he actually showed me the interface of Tradeover. And, you know, for me, that was mind-blowing. That was exactly what we needed. But to be quite honest, instead of using Tradeover, I actually applied for a role at Tradeover because I thought, you know, that was really looking really...
That was a good move.
Yeah, it was quite good because, you know, I actually requested a demonstration. So somebody from Tradeover the Netherlands came to our office. He did a demonstration, and I was so in love with the fact that you could measure everything instead of doing everything manually. So yeah, I applied for the role, and I think 2 weeks later, I was working as an account manager for Tradeover. Yeah.
So the technology is the thing you think that has changed much. What about the inventory as well? Like the partners we are working with today compared to back in the days, how has that changed?
Yeah, a lot. You know, especially in the beginning when actually Google Search came up, right? So there were no agencies doing search. So we had a lot of search partners.
That was actually a big part of affiliate marketing.
That was a huge part of all affiliate. And that's actually, you know, when that was taking over by the agencies, you know, we saw a huge drop, you know. And Also, the
same we saw later, like 2012, maybe, if I remember, 13, with programmatic advertising, right? I think it was a bit the same.
Exactly. I think the good thing about Affiliate and why I love it so much, you know, we were, and I think it sounds arrogant, but we were one of the innovators, right? So all the publishers, you know, the new ones like Search, you know, Bannering, and that all then was taken over by others. For example, a price comparison was huge, you know, also on the travel, like the meta search. And then clients and agencies, they thought, hey, that is great. So actually they set up their own price comparison department. So that was also taking away from the affiliate space. But the good thing, what I see now in the last couple of, you know, year and a half, is that that actually going back to affiliate, right? So with the Google Shopping CSS, which is the mid funnel, you know, price comparison, that is actually coming back into the affiliate space again. And I think that's a very good move. You know, that is because it is performance based. And yeah,
I actually remember when back in the days, I don't remember exactly when that was, but when Criteo started as a publisher, like it was very small
exactly.
Retargeting back
yeah,
then.
Yeah,
right now
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Huge and an own channel by itself.
But also, I think what changed a lot is the size of the publisher, right? The size of the partner. Where in the beginning, you know, we were talking to sometimes 15, 16 years old people, you know, living in their parents' house, doing all their, you know, search activities. And now, you know, and I think because I listened to some other podcasts of you know, how big those kind of publishers are these days, right? How professional they are. They are hundreds of people. Now they're full businesses, right? And I think that is also, you know, the big involvement is that everything become much more professional, right? I had a very... That's another funny story, is that I was working on a client within Trade Armor, and one of our biggest publisher went on holiday during the summer, and then the results went down because they just had that time to update their website or their activities. You can imagine that will happen today if somebody goes on holiday and then the results go down.
Prefer now speaking about partner marketing, not affiliate marketing anymore,
yeah, exactly,
because
yeah.
Like the companies we're working with, like Klarna, Microsoft, Media Houses, it's huge companies, right? Criteo, I mentioned, that has evolved a lot. When you now think about this evolution, but looking a little bit more specifically at the role of partner marketing networks and how these have evolved over time, how would you say that has changed? And where do you see them now heading for the future? So the networks themselves.
Yeah, I think the biggest key and the biggest advantage of a network is actually in the word network, right? Because what I'm expecting from a network is that they have a network of partners, which you can connect to your clients or to clients. I think what changes is that everybody, you know, really involved in the technology, right? Everybody involved in how they work, you know, all the biggest players, you know, all the biggest partners are more or less on every single network. But the differentiation is, you know, I think in two things. First of all, it is service. You know, client services is very important. You know, as I also work on network side, I'm now working most of my time on client side and agency side. What I really prefer is a good service level, because there are things that, you know, speaking from a client perspective, we can't do in the platform, like, you know, setting up the commissions, you know, the banners. That is really something, you know, if I ask something that needs to be done quite quickly, because, you know, it's a quite fast moving business, but also proactivity. Now, what's very important is that since the networks are having this chunk of amazing partners, like big ones, but also the niche ones, I'm expecting from a network that they will provide me, you know, benchmark information, gap analysis, just in order for me as a client, from a client perspective, to grow the program. Plus, what's very important is the communication and connection with the partners themselves. Because from a client perspective, I think it's good that you have a good relationship with the top partners, right? But, you know, there are also programs where you work with a lot of partners, which you cannot, you know, as a 2 or 3 man person in the team connect to everything. So it's very important that the networks will provide support, you know, the first line of support when the partner has questions. But what I really like and what I think for me, the key point from a network is the proactivity of finding and connecting and growing the partners. I think that is because they work, a network work with multiple clients. They have, you know, even much more knowledge than some of the clients or even myself on new partners, right? And that's what I really like, that I'm quite old school. So I work with some old school partners I've been working for many years. But lately, yeah, there's a lot of new partners and new possibilities and channel coming in, which are actually brought in by the networks. So I think that's very, very, very important. So yeah, I think service is key. You know, service, I was expecting an answer within 2 hours, but at least, you know, get back to us as from a client perspective. And it is the whole partnering, right? So you're a partner, you're the client, you're the network, and you are the partner, right? So the publisher, affiliate, or how are you going to call it these days? And that's very important that a network guide us as a client with new partners, with possibilities of getting new exposure plans, but also new things like, for example, I work with a client where we start working with influencers. I never worked with influencers. I'm an old guy. I'm almost 50. So, but you know, actually it came from the network that brought in the opportunity to work with influencers. And apparently, you know, it works quite good, quite well. So I'm also learning new stuff.
You mentioned the three key things, kind of like the technology, the client services, and then obviously the traffic, the partners that a brand is working with through the network. Now, in the beginning, we talked and you said like the technology itself has developed so much over time and is basically the biggest thing that has changed. Would you then still say that the technology is rather a commodity now and it's client services and the traffic acquisition mainly?
Yes and no. I'm not sure if that is an easy to understand answer, but I think it's commodity because, you know, it is vital, right? If you work in partner marketing, tracking is vital. You know, everything should be tracked correctly, right? But I think also what we have been seeing over the last couple of years in partner marketing is that if there is an issue, you know, there is a solution, right? So networks working on a solution. Like, for example, if there's something negative about, you know, cookie overrides, you know, or cookie dropping, right? What we had in the past. And then what I really like is that then the networks came with solutions, with basket-free, soft cookies, that kind of things to. So if there is an issue, I think quite fast, the industry will find a solution for it and then grow and grow and grow. So I think if you work with a bad technology, then you're out, right? That's impossible these days.
Maybe we go in there because I wanted to ask that later, but it fits now quite well as you mentioned that because you were speaking about cookie dropping. Back in the days, affiliate marketing was rather intransparent, right? So brands didn't even see what kind of partners they're working with or where exactly the traffic is coming from. That has changed now, right? Obviously. But this whole topic of fraud in affiliate marketing, especially when you compare to other channels, how would you say that this has changed over time?
I think, first of all, it is the technology that actually solved most of the problems. But I think, and probably you know me by now, is that, you know, one of my biggest frustration is that if something's happening, you know, in your affiliate channel, fraud, then it's everywhere in the news, right? So people, because now bad news sells, but there are so many other great stuff that we see in your affiliate space. And I think we should push more on the solutions, you know? Okay, there is an issue and there is a solution. And I think when the globalization starts, you know, within the industry, you know, you get a lot of traffic from vague countries all over the world. I think that was a problem for us in the industry, right? But the technology really supported us in to filter those kind of fraud activities that we had. But, you know, I think I've been working on so many programs, and it sounds a bit arrogant, but I work on so many programs. The amount of actually fraud is minimum, is really minimum. And of course, you know, there can also be fraud if you do a click campaign on a big publisher house, or if you do Google campaigns. You know, things go wrong sometimes, right? People makes mistakes. But also on the other hand, and that's also what I also try to explain sometimes, it is not only the problem from or that a partner is doing fraud, it is also the consumer try to, you know, get the system, you know. A good example is what I see a lot is that people are connected to multiple cashback sites, and what the consumer thinks sometimes, hey, I click on this one, I click on that one, and I click on that one, and then I start complaining about not getting 3 times discount or 3 times the cashback. But in the vast majority of the users of, for example, cashback websites, don't even know that there is an affiliate link behind it that tracks everything. Because the only thing what a consumer thinks is, I want to get my points, I want to get my loyalty, I want to get my discount, for example, or my cashback in this case. So they just don't understand the tracking, and they don't understand how things are working, and try to fool the system, right? And getting more discount.
Well, in the end, I think you always have the benefit of the business model, right? It's CPA, so it's pay for results only. Everybody always have the chance to validate sales in the end, approve the sales, which is a great fallback solution with which you can fix if something has gone wrong before, right? So
exactly.
I think that's one of the big advantages of the channel. Now, you already got a little bit further, so outside a pure network perspective. You have worked on network side, you are working with agencies, you work as a consultant on brand, client side. What would you say are the biggest challenges and advantages maybe as well for each of these three working in partner marketing, right? So you already picked a bit on that when you spoke about the consumer behavior. That's obviously something brands are looking into. But when you see these three essential parts of the whole scenery, what do you think? How's their view?
I think better and better, but I think there's still some education needed. So I think what is a very good trend, what I've been seeing now for the last 5 years, is that more and more agencies are building up their own partner marketing departments, which for me is a very good sign, because in the past it was, you know, okay, we have a trainee, you know, or we have, you know, a junior person, that person will be responsible for setting up, you know, the partner marketing activities. But more and more agencies are building, you know, their own partner marketing departments. And the change I see, because I, you know, I was part of building such an organization at an agency, is that in the beginning, you know, they still saw us, you know, as some kind of cowboys, you know, affiliate cowboys. What are they doing? But now, definitely the last 2 years, there is a good collaboration among the teams. So, for example, a very good example, yesterday, we work with a client, and we want to implement CSS, for example. What we actually did, together with the client and the search team, we had a call with a CSS partner, and then, you know, stick the heads together. Okay, how does CSS works? You know, how does it work compared to the search activities and the shopping activities, you know, done by the clients? And then you can see the synergies, and then you can see that okay, now that is how it works. Instead of, you know, me presenting this, is actually, you know, together with the search team, the client, and the CSS partner, together come to a very great strategy in moving forward. You know, I could not imagine that happened a couple of years ago, because all the channels were fighting with each other, right? All the channels were like, you know, yeah, I'm doing search, I'm doing display, I'm doing programmatic, and I'm doing partner marketing. And now, and that's I think the best sign I see, people, it sounds a bit weird, respecting us, and we work together because they see the added value, right? In the past, it was okay, well, traffic from affiliate is cheap, you know, and a low value traffic. And now it's becoming much more into the upper and mid funnel. Like, for example, the CSS part, is I see that as mid funnel, but also working together with, for example, a programmatic team, where we do newsletters, we do articles, and then together with the programmatic team, they are buying banners and display on the same page, right? On big media houses. So I think that is very good. That's
so
more from
an integrative approach, basically.
Exactly. And that is, I think, what we should do, because partner marketing is not only partnering with clients, agency, network, and affiliate, but it's also partnering up with the rest of the team, right? With partnering up with the rest of the channels, because the ultimate goal from a client is to drive sales, you know, against the best ROAS, for example. And you can't, you know, and maybe people disagree, but you can't do that if all the channels are starting to compete with each other, right? And start not talking to each other. I think it's very important that you keep on the conversation with the whole channel mix. Because, you know, also coming back again to the consumer behavior, you know, a consumer is not only on Google. A consumer is not only on a price comparison. The consumer is not only on, there's a lot of things going on. Right? I think in the past, we did some kind of research when I still work at a trader. I think there was around 20 something touch points, you know, from a consumer to actually buy something. You know, you have new consumers and you have existing consumers, but still existing consumers. And I think, you know, let's not forget that in this whole area, the consumer has the power. Right? The consumer decides where, what, and how to buy it, you know. And we try as a channel to be some kind of support in the overall user journey for this
consumer.
Would
you say as well that this, what you just described, is consumer behavior and thinking about the consumer, where to buy, how to get in touch with them. Would you say that this is the biggest challenge for the brands? And do you think as well that brands usually understand this behavior of consumers across the whole acquisition funnel and the different strategies and channels that need to be applied and, as you described, interact together in order to drive the best results? Do you see that? Or, like, first of all, do you think that is the biggest challenge? Or, and secondly, do you see this? Like, do you think that brands really understand that and adapt to that?
They're getting much better and better. So always when I start on a new client or when I'm involved in a new client, my first question is always describe your customer, describe your ideal customer. And I'm not getting always the answer, because they look at each other and say, okay, but why? You know, you are for partner marketing, you know, what size do you want? I say, well, for me, it's quite interesting. If you have an understanding about your ideal consumer, you know, we can actually build a strategy around that, right? And because a lot of things, you know, we just, you know, put on brand search, put on this, put on that, put on this, but then hoping that your customer will get it. But I think with the current technology, I think we are getting there, right? I think we are getting there to see the full journey, to see, you know, where the consumer is going, you know, what kind of touch points are there. There's a lot of technology out there. You know, you can do it in Google, but there's also other systems where you can track it. The only challenge I see is the amount of data, because there's a lot of data, right? Especially if you work with a very big brands with, you know, a lot of data. How do you distinguish, okay, what is the data that we need in order to optimize? I think that I think it is the biggest challenge.
Well, I think the tools are there, right? But it needs a lot of groundwork first. And then obviously quite an investment, not only into one channel, but into the whole setup of performance or even digital marketing.
Yeah, I think that is a special knowledge that you need to have, right? To oversee the whole picture. I'm not good at that, right? I'm quite, you know, siloed on my own stuff. I work with other channels, but, you know, to see the complete picture, I think that's something that brands need to understand and invest much more. But then do not forget competition, right? Because a lot of brands that I've been working with in the past, they focus on, okay, on the product, you know, let's sell the product, blah, blah, blah. And then I always go, yeah, but look, you know, you have, especially when it's not a brand, but more or less an e-shop, there's a lot of competition out there, right? So I had a lot of these discussions in the past about, okay, yeah, we don't want to work with cashback sites, or we don't want to work with voucher code sites.
Now, if you do not have a voucher code, that's fine. But hey, your competition is there. So I always use my own example. I'm addicted to Adidas Superstar shoes, sneakers, right? I'm using, as you know me, you know, for the last 20 years, you know, I'm wearing those sneakers. So there is no competition between Adidas or Nike from my perspective, right? There's only one shoe. But I can buy it on 20, 25 different, or, you know, even globally, I can buy it everywhere, right? So my search starts with, okay, maybe I can get some cashback. Maybe there's a voucher. And I'm also a consumer, right? So I'm also checking that. So if an e-tailer, you know, really wants me as a client, and probably I buy 4 pairs of shoes a year, right? Then they need to understand my behavior as well, right? So I'm checking. I'm a consumer. I'm checking the best price, because I'm not checking quality, because the shoe should be the same everywhere, right? So I'm checking for the best price and delivery time, et cetera, et cetera. So those kind of things are quite interesting for me to look at.
Super, super interesting perspective you're giving, because this, like, I have had so many conversations, but not so many like these, where really the consumer and the end client, so to say, is put into the focus, and their behavior and about how to do that. Exactly. Yes, it's always other things that are interfering there. That's very, very interesting. Thank you. Like, just picking on that, exactly what you said, because I wanted to come now to kind of like strategy and best practices from a brand perspective, because I think that's something that listeners are most interested in. Is that kind of like the secret of building a strong and long-term affiliate marketing program from a brand's perspective?
Do you mean taking the
consumer focus, yeah, this thinking from the consumer? Or what would you generally say is the secret of building, or is the core, the essentials of building a long-term successful affiliate program from a brand perspective?
I think it starts with the consumer in mind, right? The consumer in the center, but also, you know, what we just mentioned, you know, it's not easy, right? Because it's psychology, you know, there's a lot of data that you need to get. It's pure marketing, right, as well. But if that is set right, then I think a long and successful partner marketing is with the partners, right? It is very important to know your partners, to understand their needs, right? And in the past, and it's also coming a bit back in the beginning of this conversation, in the past, there was like brand. And then in a small area, you have the publishers. But the publishers driving your results, or the partners driving your results. That has been changed a lot, right? So I think we need to, everybody in this whole partnership should be equal, right? You have the brand, network, and the partner, right? And the brand is not better than a partner, and the partner is not better than the brand. You know, they're equal and have a common goal, is to get the most out of the traffic and the most out of the relationship to build, to grow, right? To grow and move forward. And of course, there's a lot of hygiene factors, what we discussed, like technology, right? Technology needs to be in place. But I think the relationship and the between the brands, the agencies, you know, the network and the partner, that is key. That is key. I always ask when I come up with again all the new clients, you know, okay, these are your top 10 partners. When was the last time you have been in contact with them? You know, or can you actually name the person who is in charge of those publishers? And you will be surprised that they don't know, right?
Is that a task for the brand themselves? Shouldn't that be rather on the networks or maybe the agency as well?
Yes, but I think also as a brand, you need to understand a bit your top. You know, if you work with 500 partners, you don't need to have them all. But at least the top five. Let's say move to the top five. You know, you need to know them, right? But even as a colleague, you know, what your contact person, you know, what are their hobbies, what are they like? It's relationship build. It's all about building relationship and trust. Because even though as a brand, you're not alone. There's competition. There are multiple brands, right? And a partner, I work with one of my colleagues these days. You know, she worked at a big partner, and she told me that they had to work with 2,000 merchants sometimes, right, on their platform. So how do you then stand up as your brand on that platform? You know, so you also need to. I think there needs to be effort from both sides. You know, not that okay. I'm the brand. I have the money. So you do what I say. No, I'm also expecting that a partner say, okay, you have the money, but hey, we can do this and this and this to bring the best value of that money, right, and to get the highest ROAS.
What you say, if I summarize that, you basically say you need to get the basics right, the technology, the tracking, the whole technical setup. You need to take it seriously and invest time. So like really paying attention, thinking about what you want to do, taking that seriously. And then thirdly, but that's something that you said already three or four times now, that it's a relationship game. It's still in the end very much a people business. While what the term partner marketing says by itself, that you need to engage, right? And share. Is that right?
Yeah, no,
would you say like that?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah.
But then now, still, there could be very, very different strategies, right? Because there is brands that just start with partner marketing. Then you are like, when you think about a life cycle of a partner marketing program, then you have this ramp up phase where the program grows a lot. And then you obviously have partner programs that are live for like literally 20 years, very well-known brands, and where you have completely different focus areas where it's much more on optimizing efficiency, the return of investment, squeezing in the different corners on how to even make that better, like one dimension. Another dimension is obviously that you have big brands, like most of the partners would want to work with Adidas, Nike, IKEA, etc. Or you have a very small brand, right, that not everybody knows, which could be a completely different strategy. You have a struggle, you need to make an effort that partners actually even recognize you, as you just described in your other examples. Would you say that the strategies from a brand perspective in these different cases differ a lot, or would you still say in the end this is very similar?
I think the basics are similar. In this case, but if you are an unknown brand, you need to fight harder. You need to pay
higher commissions then? Is it just more costly?
No, yes. I think in the beginning, yes. Because you need to convince, a partner that they will add you to their website and start promoting you, where they also, especially if it's pure CPA, then they don't know, if their investment will be paid off with the results they get, because it's an unknown brand. And I think also, and I'm not sure if you like that, what I'm now going to say, but affiliate marketing is not built up from the beginning to do brand building, right? So I think that is other stuff. There's other, I'm not saying search, but there are other channels much better in building a brand, right? TV, radio, for example, right?
Of course, you're right. But still, of course, from a network's perspective, I say that you get the branding for free on top.
Exactly. But then, I completely agree. But then you need to first have activate the partners with your brand, right? Mm-hmm. So, and if they don't know, then you need to fight harder. And set clear expectations. Don't expect goals, where you just start, we launch the program, and in 2 weeks, everybody's happy and things will go smoothly. It's not going to happen. I think you just set clear expectations towards the client, but also the client need to understand that it will take time, right? And what you just mentioned, like on the whole partner, is a people's business. And that's also why we need to spend a lot of time on, because if you do other channels, not to be disrespectful to other channels, they go sometimes into a system, they tweak on a couple of buttons and, like programmatic. And of course, there's a lot of research before, but they go, right? For example, in my day-to-day life, I need to contact 50 partners on a daily basis to get things on the website and to get the, so in that case, not everything is automated on the affiliate. But going back to your initial question, what I normally do with a very unknown brand is we focus on targeted ROAS, for example. So if you say, okay, well, we start, we have a ROAS of X, let's also try exposure. Let's also try CPC. Let's also try other remuneration models. Not only pure CPA, because then you will not go on the way, right? And then accept and do test and learn with some partners. You know, you invest. If it doesn't work, then you go to another partner. But then in total, you know, your ROAS should be on target level. But do not expect miracles from the beginning.
It's about the visibility and the recognition then in the end, right?
Exactly. But big brands also have a problem because they are not alone. You know, there's a lot of competition going out. Even if you're on if you're selling Adidas shoes, right? There's so many competition. So you need to be there as well. So it's also hard work. Right? It's not easy.
Yeah. I'm picking back on something that you just said now as well, when you said like not everything is automated. I think it's one of the characteristics, as we tipped into already, that affiliate marketing, partner marketing is a real partner game and requires a lot of relationship. It's a people's business, right? Much more than maybe other channels where you have only one publisher or you have only one platform. You have a lot of technology that helps you in order to automatically run campaigns. It doesn't work really like that in partner marketing, which obviously makes it more complex. On the other hand, it gives loads of opportunities working with all these different partners. Now, looking forward, and especially with AI becoming more and more important, what would you say would be trends there? And do you see with AI an opportunity to finally automate partner marketing more than it is today? Because so many have tried so often, right? Yeah. That we say, okay, like now it's the time to really automate partner marketing. In the end, it always stays this people business, right? And which is, of course, on the one hand, you want to automate, you want to be more efficient. On the other hand, it's like the source of the success, right? And the innovation, as we just said. But do you think now AI could be the one that could be the game changer for that?
Hard to say. I think from my perspective, AI, what you see now is really, you know, content driven. So, you know, partners creating content on AI, consumers going to ChatGPT, right? Searching for information, searching for products. But if they really can automate the day-to-day work, I'm not so sure. I think what's possible, of course, you know, what we already have been automated is like sales validation, you know, transaction inquiries, reporting. So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, we needed to do manually back in the days, right, in 2002, which is now automated, right? If you have a good SSD tracking, for example, you can even, you know, send information to the network about, you know, if an order has been canceled. So that's really great, because then we have more time for optimizing and for creating relationship.
But of these things are about efficiency, exactly.
Exactly,
yes.
There's efficiency, but really, I do not see on the short term that AI will replace me, for example, or will replace the affiliate manager, or will replace the contact from partner. What it can be doing, right, is creating the content, right? So if there is a product release, now we can be in discussion with the partner. In the past, they probably need to write. Well, we send them a briefing. They write content. Now probably they're going to use AI, right? And of course they need to rewrite it and check it. So that can save some time. But the whole relationship, I don't think that will be replaced by AI.
What about certain traffic channels? Traffic verticals? Do you think there is traffic channels that are under threat, like vouchers, for example, that they will not really be as a vertical in partner marketing anymore, because you find We can just like go to your favorite AI tool and say, get me the best Adidas Superstar sneakers with the best offer and the best price. And I don't know what else is important for you with the quickest delivery time. And then you just like get this offer potentially.
Yes, I think.
And there is no affiliate in between anymore, right?
Yeah, or the AI can be the affiliate, right? That case, or the AI tool. I think there are always, you know, and I'm coming back to my marketing, there are always early adopters, right? So people who start using that. But, you know, I don't see my parents, for example, start using an AI tool to find the best deal. They still go to Google, or they still go to their favorite page, or to their cashback program, right? Finding the deal. But yes, there will be a chunk of consumers start using that, and they will, but yeah, I need to see it. You know, I can't predict the future. And it's always a bit scary, because then I checked, okay, how do I use it myself? I don't use it, but you know, I'm only one, right? There are billions of people around the world.
We're using it quite a bit. I use it personally, and we use it quite a bit here in TradeDoubler as well, mainly at the moment in client services. So we are using tools to optimize and automate workflows. You would have loved that. I'm sure, right? Like, there is AI now that is even writing draft emails for clients. So the account manager starts in the morning, and there's like 15, 20 like automated emails if you have to send reports or stuff, right? That saves tons of time. And we are now connecting our own data, which means that you can do publisher recommendations, you can do automated reports and these kind of things, right? That helps. But what drives me, right, is... all of these things, in the end, are rather efficiency focused.
Exactly.
But I'm looking for revenue focused, right? What could be the change? That's where my questions are coming from. But I had so many conversations and haven't got really so much further.
No, I think it's. I think I'm a bit more in line with you, right? It is an efficiency game. So you know, it will support us in, as I say, like content or you know, the client service team writing emails. Writing advertising text, you know, for clients, that's great, you know, doing maybe A/B testing on certain creators, that's great. But then of course, what you just mentioned is the connection about how a user will then change their behavior in order to drive revenue for a client. That is for me also a big blind spot.
Yes.
I probably know there are a lot of people out there already has an opinion and has an idea. But for me, that is still abracadabra.
Now I am coming up with a question, just like, yes, now we're getting towards the end. Something a little bit more fun, maybe a bit more personal. What would you say is a mistake that you saw in partner marketing that you have learned most from, as a kind of like final piece of learning from you?
I think it was a personal mistake I did. And that was probably 2005. So, you know, I learned from it. Is that I was working on a client, and then we did it, what I mentioned in the beginning, we did it, had all the insights of the user journey. And one of the things I did, you know, I was quite young at that time. I was running the affiliate program, and I just, you know, went to the system to optimize. And then I wanted to do a cleanup, and I just want to, I removed all the partners that didn't drop any sale. You know, in the last couple of whatever. So quite easy task, you know, go into Excel, blah, blah, blah. And then I removed all those partners, and then sales dropped. And nobody had any idea, what's going on? You know, even the top partners were driving less sales. So what's going on? And then we realized, but at that time, you know, we didn't have full insights, was that, you know, all the partners, or not all, but a lot, some of the partners I actually removed from the program, they drove the first click and the initiative, you know, for a consumer. So, you know, I think, you know, it took us at that time, maybe 2 weeks, right, to figure it out. And then everything went back. You know, that is a mistake I would never do. You know, I would just never go into a program and remove publishers because they are not driving sales. Because you never know, if you do not have the data, if they are somewhere in the funnel,
right? So that's
it describes very well what you have been talking about earlier about this connection across the user journey funnel,
exactly.
Right?
What is
actually the touch points that are driving sales that convert then in the end somewhere. But there have been multiple hands in that.
Now you have a lot of insight, right? You can see it on the in the attribution, you know, in the different tools. But at that time, you know, I just a lot of clicks, no sales, remove it. Right?
Great.
Learning,
great.
Never do that again.
Thank you so much, Marcel. That was really, really interesting.
Hey, you're welcome.
Now, at the end, I have three final questions that I ask all my guests, a little bit more on the personal side. I hope that is okay for you.
Yeah, okay, sure. Give it to me.
And I have to admit, it's a little bit selfish. I use it for myself, asking you now, what is the best book you ever read? I need some inspiration as well, and our listeners too.
Yeah, the best book I ever read. Actually, I first read it in English. Then it was so interesting, I actually bought it also in Dutch. I think I probably read it 3 or 4 times. It is Getting Things Done from David Allen. It's this kind of, way of working, not getting stressed of all the stuff that you need to do, right? And it's really planning everything. It's a very simple. I probably can... talk about in a different podcast all about how it's implemented. I do it every
you
single
have,
day.
I think I remember now. You gave me this book as a present once.
Have you read it?
Yeah. Of course, I read it. Yeah. It rings a bell, and I remember. Yeah. Yes.
I think that's the best learning. I think it's a bestseller. Right, a lot of people using it. It's kind of productivity way of working, and I actually do it every single day. I have actually. That in another system where I actually follow that through every single day. There are also a lot of pitfalls with it, but let's not spend a lot of time on the getting things done methodology. But
Then another one, the same for any tool or an app that you would say. Which one is your favorite? Which one you can't live without?
That's Evernote, and that's connected to the book. So it's Evernote. It's a productivity app. If I do not have access, I have probably the highest subscription I can get. For Evernote, I have it on all my devices. I cannot live without Evernote. Everything is there. My whole life. If you find my login of Evernote, you know me. Everything is there. But also my day-to-day activities, everything is stored in Evernote.
Great. If I remember correctly, the really cool thing about Evernote is that it's connected between different tools and systems, right? So you can basically use it everywhere.
I love synchronization. I can update it on my iMac. When I'm on the road, I can see it on my iPhone, on my iPad, and it's synced very fast. So I love that.
Good. The last one, I know the question as well. I still ask it. If you were not a partner marketing rock star, what else would you be doing?
Then I would be a real rock star. I'm a musician.
Right?
So I'm a musician. I would love, that's my ultimate dream, but I'm getting old now. Is to touring around the world with a famous rock band and be on stage, stadium concerts.
But you still go on stage, right?
Yeah, but it's small stage, right? It's an amateur band. I think the biggest audience we had was about 2,000 people at a festival, which was nice.
That's fantastic.
But I would love to be
on stage. I saw you on
stage
at our get together there once in Stockholm, right? That was brilliant.
With a cover band, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that will be my ultimate dream, right? But
it's good about you have a good hobby, right?
Yeah.
Semi-professional, at least.
Wow. Not making money with it. Spending a lot of money on it, on equipment. But and actually, last night, because we rehearse every single week, so we have our own rehearsal room here in the Netherlands. So every Thursday evening, we spend a couple of hours playing our songs.
Perfect. Marcel, thank you so much. That was a really good talk.
Thank
you for all these insights and stories you shared. Thank you so much. Great talk.
I really like
you.
It. Well, thanks for having me. It was an honor. So thanks a lot.
Talk soon.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is produced by TLDR Studios.